now the procedure was usually that you went there and say you went there in February, you got your appointment for September. Mm-hmm. And that was already lucky because you had to please the secretary who gave you this appointment. Mm. And then when you got this appointment, you talked to Capasta, who was the director of the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And when he liked you or liked the score you showed him, then he would really actually schedule it for performance, and that was then next February.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some way it was perhaps for a creative person not so bad, because your mind was at ease. There was only this one opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get it or you couldn't get it. And when you got it, you knew. Then up to February, there was nothing in the world you could do. Well, in America, you know, you almost it left us breathless in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thousands of things that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
But there was really never any definite no to anything, because at the next step, there was so many other opportunities, and you kept running. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't good for a creative person.
No.
You know?
No, I agree. there's one last thing, perhaps, about establishing himself as a professional composer. We've said he supported himself by teaching, and just before Hitler's final rise to power, Eric was appointed a professor at the Vienna Conservatory. Is this not
correct? Yeah, well, he was by that time in his, you know, about 31, 32, mm-hmm. and that, of course, he had many performances and was getting recognition and being regarded as a great talent of great hope. And so this showed also in that the Professor Reitler, who was the director mm-hmm. of the conservatory, was giving him a contract
mm-hmm.
as to teach at the conservatory for the next season. But then Hitler came and they both emigrated.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
It never came to it.
But this is one of many examples of
yeah.
how unfortunate circumstances
sure.
beyond Eric's
yeah.
control worked against him.
Yeah.
I think that to conclude this first interview, perhaps we could ask you a couple of very favorite stories about Eric. And since both of them involve you, perhaps you could tell us when your connection with Eric began, because you certainly knew him very early. And
well, it began through a common friend of us, of whom you had heard me mention, Fritz Kramer.
Yes.
You know, I grew up with Fritz Kramer, and he was like a brother to me, because our mothers were best friends, and we
mm-hmm.
grew up from babyhood together, and spent all our vacations together, and all the Sundays together. And Fritz was a kind of a piano prodigy. And
mm-hmm.
a very fine musician. And one day he began telling me that he had met at a party, and he, in his word, "I have met somebody who can play everything like me," he said, you know. And then pretty soon he began telling me that this person, you know, was so gifted as a composer, and he tried to describe in words
mm-hmm.
What he had composed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, "You must meet him." So one day, you know, Vienna has this wonderful environment, and when you meet, you go out into the Wiener Wald.
Oh, yes.
You know, especially when the weather is beautiful. So we went to a place called Hausel am Rahn, you know. And that is a little in the middle of the woods, you know,
mm-hmm.
and their specialty was Riebisselwein, which is, Riebissel is gooseberry or something
right.
like this.
Mm-hmm.
The little, little red berries, very tart, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they had made a wine
mm-hmm.
out of it, which wasn't at all very powerful,
mm-hmm.
but very good. And he had brought Eric along, and Eric and we all drank a glass of Riebissel wine.
Mm-hmm.
I was about between 16 and 17, and Eric must have been 18,
mm-hmm.
maybe, at this time. Well, this glass of Riebissel wine had a very unexpected effect, because it was like a whole bottle of whiskey would have worked on somebody else. He was completely, but completely drunk. And he